Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Migurei Aviv Be'eretz Kena'an. OU Israel presents
Come In. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayeshev, but it's also a pre-Hanukkah show, since the next show will already be after Hanukkah has started. This Shabbat, Vayeshev, is sometimes Shabbat Hanukkah, usually it's the Shabbat right before, and thematically, the Parshat HaShavua has a link to Hanukkah, and not a very comfortable link. We'll talk about that. Recording and first broadcast Yom Chamishi, Thursday, Yud Tet Kislev, which happens to be a Chabad holiday. Yud Tet Kislev, the 19th of Kislev, 5772, on the secular calendar, December 15th, as the year 2011 winds down. Without further ado, Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir HaMa'alot Mima'amakim Karaticha Adonai. Adonai Shema V'Koli Tehiena Oznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai. Im Avonot Tishmor Yo Adonai Mia Amod Ki Imecha Hasalicha L'Ma'an Tivorei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi, v'lidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifte et Yisrael, mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzarau v'ashivya ha'omedim ebein bayam, ובין ביבשה המקום ירחם עליהם ויוציאם מצרה לרווחה ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. Jonathan Pollard has been in prison for 9,520 days. Okay, unlike the last number of weeks, we did not start the show with a TV theme. We started with a Hanukkah melody, Kad Katan, Kad Katan, and no contest there, but we still owe a whole bunch of CDs and we'll be paying off sometime soon. Okay, I mentioned before a link between Vayeshev and Hanukkah. Let's go back a step and look at Vayeshev by itself. The opening verse, which you heard at the beginning of the show, Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Migurei Aviv Be'eretz Kena'an. Yaakov settled down in the land where his father had lived, where he was born and raised, the land of Kena'an, the future Eretz Yisrael. Commentaries point out a poignant note, that after all that Yaakov had been through over the last 22 years, fleeing from Esav who wanted to kill him, being mistreated by uncle and then father-in-law Lavan, and then encountering Esav on his return, and spending more time away from home, he finally comes down to settle down. The commentaries say he wanted now to be peaceful, but it was not to happen. And what the Sedra begins with is the episode of Yosef and his brothers. Now, whenever I write the lead tidbit, not whenever I write it all the time, but each week when I write the lead tidbit, I take a look at previous lead tidbits of the same Sedra and try to find something new, or at least a new angle. This time with Vayeshev, and it happens every so often, I could not escape the main idea, because I think it's a very important idea. It's important to repeat it. It's important to change it around a little as I repeat it, in order to hopefully someday hit home. The Sedra, very close to the beginning, mentions that Yosef was bringing negative reports on his brothers to his father. We would call that a snitch. And it's not really disrespectful to Yosef HaTzadik to call it a snitch, because commentaries and other sources criticize Yosef for what he did. Sometimes the criticism comes directly and sometimes indirectly in the form of pointing out something that happens to Yosef to say he's getting his comeuppance from that, bringing the negative reports to his father. Any of the details of what reports he gave his father, and whether they were true or false or a little bit true or misconstrued or whatever, came back to haunt him. So that's a bad way to start. And it gets worse. V'Yisrael and Israel, another name for Yaakov, Ahavet Yosef Mikol Banav, loved Yosef among all of his sons. Kiven Zikunim Hulo, because he was born towards the end. Can't really say that because Binyamin came later, but he was born from his beloved Rachel. V'asa lo ketonat pasim, and he made for him the multicolored striped garment. Vayir'u echav, and his brothers saw this. Ki oto ahav avihem mikol echav, vayisne'u oto. The brothers saw that their father loved Yosef more than he loved them, and he hated Yosef for it. They hated Yosef for it, and they couldn't speak to him in peace. Yosef then has a dream, and he tells his brothers, and they hate him more. And he has another dream, and he tells it to his brothers, and the hatred increases. You read these psukim every year when you get around to Vayeshev, and as I expressed in the headline of the lead tidbit and the hard copy of Torah Tidbits, oh no, not again. You want to say to Yaakov, don't give him that special coat. You want to say to Yaakov, don't show in front of the others that you love him the best. Parenthetically, I hope this is not just boasting, but the ideal in a family is that each of the children should feel special in the eyes of their parents, and the children themselves should feel as if they are favored. And if you have more than a child, you have 2, 3, 4, 5, doesn't matter how many, they all should feel that way. If they have to argue, let them say, Mommy and Daddy love me more than they love you. Not, they love you more than they love me. The first argument is not great, but it's not as harmful as the second one. In fact, the Gemara says a person should be very, very careful not to favor one child over others, even to the point of giving an extra portion of dessert, because it creates a jealousy which is very potentially harmful. And the Sedra testifies to that. The Sedra continues that the brothers were out tending the sheep, and Yaakov sends Yosef to them to get a report, find out how they're doing. You want to again scream, don't go. Yaakov, don't send him. Yosef, don't go. You would rather he trip and break his leg than go to his brothers who would like to kill him. It is a very, very hard Sedra to read and to hear and to learn. And even when you find some of the commentaries that try to give a positive spin on some of the things that occurred, you can't get away from the bottom line. The Medrash says, God says to the people of Israel, you sold your brother into slavery. I swear by your lives that every year, forever, you will say, Avadim hayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. Shibud Mitzrayim, the enslavement in Egypt and that whole experience, as important as it was for the formation of the Jewish people, and as much as it, especially the coming out of the slavery, is a central theme in Jewish life, in practice, in the cycle of the Chagim, and in many, many other mitzvot, it was an extremely lamentable experience that could have been avoided. But it was there, and it started when Yaakov not showed favoritism to Yosef, but showed it to Yosef's mother, Rachel. We sometimes sympathize with Yaakov that he was deceived by Lavan and married off to Leah before he got to Rachel. It doesn't change the fact that Leah was very aware of Yaakov's feelings for Rachel. It hurt her very much. God, the Torah tells us, saw Leah's pain and made her prolific while Rachel, Rachel, was barren. These are hard ideas to get away from. They're there. Hatred of the brothers. We have prophecies of eventual reconciliation, but it hasn't happened. It continues to this day in all different forms, but it continues. I believe that we look at our own society and we look at religious versus non-religious, orthodox versus conservative versus reform, Haredi versus religious Zionists, religious Zionists versus secular Zionists, Haredi versus non-religious, Ashkenazim, Svaradim. It goes on and on and on. And we haven't learned the lessons that the Torah is screaming at us. Now the fact is, we are the ones that have to learn these lessons. Yosef and his brothers and Yaakov Avinu are not here to learn these lessons. They can't learn from their mistakes. We can and we must learn from their mistakes. It's not easy. I wish I had answers as easily expressed as the criticism that I'm talking about, the problems that I'm talking about. Much easier in this case to describe the problems than recommend solutions. I'm not willing, and I don't think we should be watering down Judaism to accommodate all those people who are not willing or whatever to keep all of the mitzvot. I believe you have to keep all of the mitzvot. I believe you have to do it with love as well as fear of God. And since we have free will, I still feel it's a requirement that many people slacken off from. I can't accept the watered down version of Torah Judaism of the conservative movement or of the reform movement, even worse. And I am not condemning individual fellow Jews for what they do and for what they don't do. I'm talking now for a moment about the institution of conservative Judaism, Reform Judaism. There really is no such thing. There's Torah Judaism, and anything that suggests an alternative to that is not acceptable in the eyes of the Torah. I know that's a broad statement, and maybe people will give me feedback, and we could go from there. That's not the point. The point is, I am not recommending homogenizing everybody. I am recommending that each of us evaluate or re-evaluate our attitudes and relationships with people who don't have the same standards that we do. And how do you approach them? I went once to a guy screaming, Shabbos, Shabbos, on the highway. And I said, how do you expect to bring Shabbos violators closer to keeping Shabbat? By screaming at them? I said, you ever invite one to your home for a Shabbat meal? You ever talk to non-religious people about the beauty of keeping mitzvot? No, I can't do that. Then he looked at my kippah and he said, you can do it, you're closer to them than I am. There's worse to that story, but I'm not going to tell you the whole thing. The point is that Ahavat Yisrael, love of Jews, is not restricted to the ones who wear tzitzis versus the ones who don't, and the ones who keep kosher versus the ones that don't. And I'm not talking about people who know better and violate and scorn. I'm talking about the average non-observant Jew in Israel and out of Israel. We know this not instinctively. We know this because we're taught it. It should be instinctive, but it's not. That we consider people who are not yet religious to be tinok shenishba, a baby that was taken into captivity and never taught the proper way to behave. Because Shabbat is beautiful, and the concept of making brachot before you eat and after you eat and thanking God and praying to God and all the mitzvot between man and God and interpersonal are all beautiful. So how come there are people who don't do them? The answer is they were never taught it the right way. It was either not part of their education or it was shoved down their throat. Neither is very effective. There is a way. It's called Kiruv Rechokim or Kiruv Levavot or just Kiruv, which is bringing people closer by showing them, giving them experiences of Torah observance where they hopefully will come to a feeling of, I like this. I'd like to do more of this. Not so simple. And I'm straying a little. The friction between Yosef and his brothers was not religious versus non-religious. It was other issues. But anything that splits the Jewish people, whether it's an attitude towards living in Israel, whether it's an attitude towards the state of Israel, whether it's religious observance, whether it's cultural background, whatever, we have to understand with all of our hearts and our minds that what binds us together as Jews is far greater than what separates us from each other. And Yosef and his brothers need to reconcile. And in next week's Haftorah in Vayigash, you have a prophecy of the reuniting of the kingdom of Israel and of Judah, but it hasn't happened yet. Temporarily, we don't have a kingdom, but the last report was separate and not well, and this is something that starts with the enmity in this Sedra, and in a moment, I'm going to try to relate this to Chanukah. That little clip from Hallel, together with the opening Kad Katan, is from an album by Tizmoret Shalhevet called Lehodot Ulehallel. It includes 28 tracks of Hanukkah songs and Hallel songs, and I chose this one on purpose because it mentions Yosef, even though it wasn't referring to the person Yosef. We'll be right back with Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Vayeshev. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio, and I was just about to transition from Parshat Shavua, we're not finished with it, to Chanukah. Now, prior to this week's Sedra Vayeshev, we had, let's say, three Sedras, Toledot, Vayetze, and Vayishlach, where we were introduced and presented with a scenario or a series of scenarios of Israel facing its enemies from outside. The Esav and Esavs of the world, including grandson Amalek, and the Lovans of the world, who attempt to vanquish Yaakov and his descendants, were dealt with in those Sedras. Vayeshev's irony is that Yaakov has put all of that behind him to settle down, and he is very much unsettled by the tension, friction, and hatred among his children. Now, Chanukah story, at least the superficial part of the story, the way you learn it from kindergarten on, or even before, is the enemy from the outside version. The Yevanim, the Greeks, tried to assimilate us, to Hellenize us, then forcibly to stop us from keeping certain mitzvot in order to wrench us away from our commitment to God and to Torah. And Chanukah represents the victory of the Jews, the Jewish people, small in number, over a greater, numerically, a greater enemy, and with God's help, we succeeded. And we celebrate every single year the 8-day holiday of Chanukah. And if you look at the prayer that we insert in every Amidah and Birkat HaMazon, you will see that primarily we are talking about our enemies from outside. There is veiled reference to a more insidious kind of problem, and that is the inner tension that there was among the Jewish people. When you have a threat from the outside, which is met by some Jews as saying, I think it's a good idea, I think the Greeks are really cool, and we should accept and follow their ways, and the Torah's ways are maybe old-fashioned, and maybe they were good in the past, but we don't need them now, time to move on. So here, the enemy from the outside can fold its arms across its chest, smile, a derisive kind of smile, and let us fight ourselves. You have this, unfortunately, in every generation, different forms and manifestations, but you have a battle, an ongoing battle within the Jewish people, which I referred to earlier, in all of the various splits in our community and tensions that we have. In the specific reference to Chanukah, we have Mityavnim. Mityavnim are not Yevanim, the Greeks, but Mityavnim, the ones among the Jewish people who adopted and accepted the Greek way of life, the Greek culture. And those who stood up for the honor of God were not just concerned with fighting our enemy from the outside, but also of convincing our, can't say enemy, it's not a nice word to use for fellow Jews, but let's call it adversaries within the Jewish community. And that's a harder battle to fight. I've said this in the past, but to me it's one of the outstanding lessons that I learned from Rabbi Zev Leff, of many, many things that I learned from him. This one really, really had a very special kind of impact. In the daily davening, the weekday Amidah, we have a petition to save us from informers. Apparently there was a difficult period of time when our own people were informing on each other, and it was a new enemy to add to the list. V'lamal shinim al tehi tikva. V'chol harisha kerega toved. All of the wickedness should disappear in an instant. V'chol oyvecha, or, okay, we'll leave it like that, mehera yikaretu. V'hazedim mehera ta'aker u'tishaber u'timager v'tachnia b'mehera v'yomenu. Let's not get into the definition there, but look at the chatima of the bracha, the ending of the bracha. Baruch atah Hashem, blessed are you God, shover oyevim u'machnia zedim. You break the enemy, and you convince the scoffer. You bring him to his knees, but you don't destroy him, you don't break him. Our enemies from the outside, we will fight. Our problems internally, we should work on a different plane. Shover oyevim, but just machnia zedim. Machnia is to convince and to bring them to their senses. That's how we should face our internal problems. In the Al Hanisim of Chanukah, we count out different things that we thank God for. Masarta giborim biad chalashim. You put mighty warriors into the hands of the weak. That's the Greeks. Virabim baad ma'atim. The many into the hands of the few. Utmeim baad tahorim. And the defiled into the hands of the pure. Urashaim biad tzadikim. And wicked people into the hands of the righteous. Vizedim biad osikei toratecha. Zedim are the people among us, fellow Jews, who have turned their backs on Judaism in one form or another. They too succumbed to the Osekei Toratecha, the ones who held fast to your Torah. But that's not part of the Hanukkah story. That's not part of the Hanukkah songs. That's not part of what we teach. That's the undercurrent that was there, which we have to be aware of. And I think that our sages were very wise for not belaboring that point, not airing that problem, letting it be under the table, and not spoil the celebration of Chanukah, but still be there in for the purpose of our thinking, introspection, and setting an agenda to do something about it. I sort of apologize for jumping these songs at you without introduction. I usually introduce them. This is from that same Shalhevet Orchestra album for Chanukah. This is another line in Hallel. Kol Rina Vishua, the Lord's right hand, has done mighty deeds. The Lord's right hand is lifted high. The Lord's right hand has done mighty deeds. Had a friend way back who told me that his army unit used to march to this melody. It's something that somehow fits the flavor of Chanukah, even though it's part of generic Hallel. Let me jump now to the end of the Parsha, where you have the episode of Yosef in prison and two other prisoners of the Pharaoh, his wine steward and the baker, the royal baker, are imprisoned. We have a tradition that the king found a fly in his wine and incarcerated his wine steward, and found a pebble in his bread and threw the baker into jail. The Torah tells us that one night the two of them, the wine steward and the baker, had dreams, and they woke up very agitated, and the wine steward, Yosef asked him what was what, and he said, I'm very agitated from a dream, and he says, tell me the dream, and I'll tell you God's interpretation of your dream. And he tells him the dream, and Yosef says, in 3 days' time, the king will restore you to your former position. And our commentaries make the point of saying that a fly getting into wine can't really be blamed on the wine steward. A pebble in bread is another story. It means not a clean baking surface. And sure enough, the baker told his dream to Yosef, and Yosef said, another 3 days, you'll be removed from prison, and your head will be removed from the rest of your body. And that happened as well. I don't want to get into that in detail. I do want to mention that Yosef says to the Sar HaMashkim, to the wine steward, remember me to Paro, and get me out of this place. And the very end of the parsha tells us that the Sar HaMashkim did not remember Yosef, and he forgot him. And the commentaries say Yosef languished an additional 2 years in prison because he relied on the Sar HaMashkim to get him out and failed. So there's a famous question. The question is can be summed up with a famous story, joke, story, whatever, with a moral lesson about a town that was flooded from the river nearby in heavy rains, and people left, evacuated the town, few people that were left. Somebody had a rowboat and collected some people from rooftops. And they go to this one fellow who's standing on a rooftop, and he's saying Tehillim, reciting Psalms, and fervently praying to God for salvation. And they say, come on in, we got room in the boat, we'll take you to safety. And he said, nope, I rely on God. An hour later, the water is even higher. Fewer people are left in the town. A police launch passes by and says, come on in, we'll take you to safety. And he says, no, I rely on God. An hour later, the water is almost engulfing him, and a helicopter flies overhead, drops down a rope ladder with a soldier at the end, and says, just grab onto the end of the ladder and climb up, and we'll haul you out of here. No, he says, I rely on God, and only God. And he continues saying his Tehillim, and he drowns, and he dies. He comes before a heavenly court, and he says, I have a complaint against God. I was faithful to him, and when trouble happened, I prayed fervently for his help, and I relied on his help, and he let me down. The answer the person received is, who do you think sent the rowboat, the police launch, and the helicopter? A person does not abandon his belief in God or his faith in God or his trust in God by getting into a rowboat that a neighbor is rowing toward safety. Nor does he display a lack of faith when he climbs up a rope ladder into a helicopter to be saved. That is called hishtadlus. Hishtadlus means our effort. And that's necessary in order not to falsely rely on miracles. We appreciate miracles when they happen, but you're not allowed to rely on them. Ein somchim al hanes. Could it not be that Yosef was in a position and that God actually gave those dreams to the two royal prisoners who should be agitated by them, and Yosef should successfully interpret their dreams in order for him to say to the wine steward, remember me to Paro and get me out of here. That's a reasonable kind of thing. That's hishtadlus. On the face of it, Yosef did not do anything wrong. He did what a person is supposed to do in that situation. So how come we say that he languished in prison an additional 2 years? What's the story? Now, I've mentioned this before, and I really shouldn't even say that, because you either remember or you don't. And if you don't remember now, you're alerted to the fact that I definitely said it before. I remember back in the Gulf War, in the beginning of the 90s, when we had civil defense instructions as to how to make a sealed room in case of a gas attack of some sort, and all citizens were issued gas masks, and there were procedures. And I remember a member of Knesset from one of the, let's call them, ultra-Orthodox parties, who proudly, and I say arrogantly, announced he does not have a gas mask, has no intention of using one, he relies on God that nothing should happen to him. I think that is folly. I think that is irresponsible. I think he and all people in Israel at that time were supposed to follow the instructions and make a sealed room and provide it with all of the material that we were told, and to wear a gas mask when a siren goes off. And your trust in God and your faith in God that he will save you is the part that you can't do anything about. You can't control what missiles were being fired towards Israel and whether they had unconventional warfare warheads or not, and where they would hit. That's not in your domain. That's in God's domain, with the help from the army, and all human effort need be expended. You have to seal a room if that's what you're told. You have to wear a gas mask during an alert if that's what you're told. You have to turn your radio on throughout Shabbat, where they had frequencies that broadcasted silence except during a siren to give instructions, so you didn't have to turn on and turn off the radio. That's hishtadlus. The army's hishtadlus was something else, with the Patriot missiles that went to deflect or destroy the Scuds. And after all of that effort, what you're left with is trust and faith in God that you will be spared. A person who panics when the siren goes off, that's the person you question whether he has a lack of faith or not. To be nervous, everybody could be nervous. To not know what's going to happen, normal. But not to panic. I said this a couple of weeks ago with Yaakov's encounter with Esav. So getting back to Yosef, the question remains, what was wrong with what he did? Now, it could be the simple explanation that's given is Yosef is on a different level from the average person, and the average person doesn't behave the way, the average person should have done what Yosef did, but Yosef was on a higher level and he shouldn't have done it. I'll tell you how I understand it. The Sar HaMashkim, the wine steward, had just met this Jewish fellow who keeps saying, God will give me the interpretation of your dream to tell you, because that's in God's hands. And then he goes and asks, remember me to Paro? I can see the wine steward saying, ha, Jew trusts in God, and he's asking me to help him out? So it could have been like a chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name, and that's a limit. You do whatever you can without desecrating God's name. I don't know if that's the best way to understand what happened or the only way, but the comments are in place. Yosef was in trouble. We find ourselves in difficult situations. You need a combination of effort, hishtadlus, and bitachon, trust in God. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, lehishtameah.